The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
On Sunday morning, when you sluggishly stir from your slumber, you might be quoting Cher, wishing you could turn back time 60 minutes, regaining the hour that was snatched as you snoozed, or anger expressed, fittingly, on TikTok.
It's going to take us at least 2 weeks to get our sleep routines back in order.
Though with the sun rising later and setting later, some do see daylight saving time's bright side.
Spring is coming. Longer days are almost here. Hallelujah.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's great to be here with you today. Don't forget, set a reminder. Set your clocks forward. What's great about your cell phone, it does it automatically. But I always marvel at people when it comes to going to Mass. The Saturday after clocks are moved one direction or the other. So maybe go Saturday night, right? You can sleep in. You can relax a little bit. We're going to spring up this coming Saturday night. That'll be nice. I'm looking forward to a little more daylight, to be honest with you. Kind of like it. I hope you do too. I want to talk about something today. I want to talk about sleep. If you're having trouble sleeping, I'm telling you what, turn up the radio or tell somebody you know to get plugged in. Why sleep experts don't like daylight saving time, right? Why is that? Lawmakers keep pushing to make daylight time permanent, right? A lot of health groups favor standard time, because they say it's more aligned with your particular body clock. And research shows that, you know, the abrupt seasonal shift in time, it messes with your circadian rhythms. And it causes you to have sleep problems, sleep disturbances. You're tired. You got this increased fatigue. And the other really interesting element here is, you know, after we mess with the clocks, quite often there's heightened risk of heart attacks and strokes, car accidents go up, a whole litany of other things. We talk about this, you know, at least twice a year. But if you got questions about sleep, we're going to be joined in just a minute by Dr. Lou Tartaglia. He is a sleep expert, and we'll talk about everything from how to get a good night's sleep to what shift work does for you to, you know, the type of foods that might keep you awake or put you to sleep. So there's a lot to get into. Everything goes. The number to get in, 888-914-9149. Maybe it's providential you tuned in today. So daylight saving time begins at 2 a.m. Sunday. That's when you move that clock up. It means sunrise and sunset on Sunday is going to take place like an hour later. Maggie and I sit in a studio here, and we were just talking about the broadcast. And now in the studio that I'm broadcasting in, I've got a whole wall that's just nothing but glass. And I can actually see out through another wall, which is glass. And we get to watch the sun go down in the wintertime. Oh, my gosh, when it gets dark, it's such a bummer. You feel like you're here all day, but when you leave here and it's bright, it's awesome. So an extra hour means, you know, maybe a little more exercise, a little more daylight. That's going to be good for your D levels and a whole lot more. But we'll talk strategies, how to best adjust for daylight savings and how to keep yourself happy and healthy when it comes to sleep. Do sleep needs change as we age? You know, how does artificial light, particularly blue light, influence your sleep quality? And, you know, how could stress and anxiety and all those other problems that seem to weigh down on you, how is that affecting your sleep? And more than anything, how do you rise above all that? I'm joined right now by Dr. Lou Tartaglia. He is a sleep medicine specialist at the Toledo Sleep Disorder Center Sleep Laboratory. And we've talked to him about a couple books. He wrote the book, The Last Gift of the Magi, just came out with another one as well. You can check out his website. It's Tartaglia.com. But let me spell that for you. It's Tartaglia. Good Italian name, Tartaglia. Tartaglia.com. Check him out there. Doctor, good to have you back. Welcome.
It's great to be back.
You know, your domain name, I just got to tell you, your web address, that's a tough one for people because Tartaglia doesn't sound anything like it's spelled in Italian with the G-L-I, you know?
But right. The word taglia means cut. So Tartaglia sounds like you're saying cut. And it translated into English, Tartaglia means stutter.
No, it doesn't really. How interesting.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, you have no problem there. I know you and I have spoken many times on the air here. Let's talk daylight savings. Let's go through like a 101, and we'll take a few calls. So if you want to get in, I know phones get pretty busy here. But if you got a question regarding your sleep, feel free to sound off 888-914-9149. We're going to spring forward. Can people make preparations, you know, to make that transition easier? And, you know, give us some background. How did this all come about? And what kind of effect does it have now, not just on the country, but on the body?
Yeah, well, this is the harder one because you lose an hour. And if people could prepare for it by getting up a little bit earlier each morning before the change occurs, but most people don't do that. And since it occurs on a weekend, most people stay up a little bit later and lose more time.
Sure.
And so it's really difficult. And then what happens is there's about a week where we see all kinds of phenomena occur. Your circadian rhythm is a little bit out of alignment. You're waking up earlier before the sunlight is up. And it's just unnatural.
Yeah, no kidding.
And our politicians, of course, they want to change it so that it's worse, not better.
You know, we've talked in the past about this, and I always found it striking that heart attacks, strokes, car accidents, all those things go up when we mess with the clock.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, and you know, there's a clock in your gut, too. So even the way your digestive system operates gets a little bit messed up when there's a time change.
Yeah, no kidding. My guest, Dr. Lou Tartaglia, we're talking sleep here and best ways to stay asleep and best ways to navigate what's going to be a tough clock change. This is harder than one in the fall. Go ahead, Maggie. I know you want to jump in.
What he just said kind of blew my mind. I guess I never thought about the gut having a clock. And I have always called it morning tummy, like when you have a really early flight, let's say like 5 a.m. and you got to wake up really early and you're doing all this stuff before the sun is up. And my stomach always feels really weird when I'm up early. Is that because of what you're talking about?
Right, because so when you get up and you, especially if you get up and you eat and it's way earlier than you normally would, then everything starts to move in the intestines, but it's not in sync with what you were doing beforehand.
Yeah.
Most primitive people don't eat breakfast, by the way. And when the statement came out that breakfast is the most important meal of the day, Kellogg was the head of the USDA that came out with that report, and there was no research to support it.
Yeah, so does fasting affect sleep?
Actually, people sleep better when they're fasting.
Yeah, I've noticed I did. Like, if I do a longer fast, more than 24 hours, I do 36 or 40 hours. Man, I sleep great. I love it. It's not like I'm waking up in the middle of the night saying, man, I'm starved. I got to eat, you know. After you get past
it,
that first.
You're not hungry, and you have more energy.
It's wild, isn't it? I love it.
Yeah, it really is.
So if somebody is suffering with sleep disorders or problems, could fasting help them sleep better?
Some people, yeah. Younger children need to eat before they go to bed. If they go to bed hungry, they don't sleep as well.
Yeah.
But the elderly generally don't do well if they eat at night. Yeah. They eat late at night, then their sleep is disrupted.
Well, let's do this. We'll grab a couple of calls. 888-914-9149. We're talking sleep. We turn the hands of the clock up. We spring forward. It's going to have an impact on you. And if you're already waking up in the middle of the night, or you can't fall asleep, or you know, you're stressed out, you're lucky because today we got Dr. Lou Tartaglia with us, a sleep expert, and he's here to help you. Richard's in Cedar Lake, Indiana. Hi, Richard. Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm another Paisan, Corvari.
All right.
Yeah.
Lots of Italians today.
Yeah, calibrated. I'm having a hell of a time sleeping. I'm 81 years old, and I'm still working like 40 hours a week.
Wow.
I'm blessed. God has blessed me, and you know, it seems like I would be tired, and I do some exercises. I do a lot of stretching. I got those bands. I've been on TV and on the radio talking about senior health.
Yeah.
But man, I can't sleep. I mean, I'm tossing and turning all night. Yeah.
So you bring up a good point, Richard, because with age, I know sleep gets affected. Doctor, can you speak to that? Maybe give him some advice?
Yeah, well, the specific advice I can't give you because there's so many, it's so complicated to figure out what's actually causing the disruption in sleep. So the inability to fall asleep is either psychophysiologic insomnia, people who worry, there's a lot of stress. It could be restless leg syndrome, or it could be apnea at the sleep-wake interface. They're stopping breathing just as they start to fall asleep, and the suffocation reflex kicks in, and they can't fall asleep. Yeah. Waking up in the middle of the night is a whole another set of issues that could be going on. That could be actual insomnia. It could be apnea that's waking them up. It could be some sort of a parasomnia, an unusual movement during sleep. And then as you get older, it's easier to fall asleep earlier. So there are a lot of patients that wind up going to bed at 8 o'clock and waking up and getting out of bed at 4 a.m. Wow. And then that makes it more difficult for them to socialize in the evening.
So, you know, Richard's having trouble. He's wrestling. He's tossing and turning. You know, I was thinking of practical advice for people who are listening. You're the sleep expert, but I'll throw out some stuff that, you know, I'm aware of. The room temperature. I mean, keep your room cold, right? That's a big thing. The other thing is to, if you're watching TV in your room or you've got your iPad or your cell phone or computer, that blue light will certainly mess with you. I don't know whether Richard does that, but what are some of the things we can do to make our sleep hygiene, our sleep environment more inviting and maybe aid us in getting a restful night's sleep?
Right. Make sure you're going to bed around the same time 7 days a week and getting out of bed the same time. Try to sleep until you're done. Don't wake up with an alarm unless you absolutely have to. And then keeping the room cool is really crucial. The cooler the room, the deeper you sleep. And this is even more important for men than it is for women. Doing a little bit of progressive relaxation before you fall asleep. Allowing yourself to be fully relaxed in bed. That also helps. Right. The blue light actually tells your brain that it's morning. So if you're on a device and it's emitting blue light, your brain is being set to wake up.
Wow. Yeah, so if and I or Richard, I hope you get a good night's sleep. The only other thing too, doctor, I would suggest too is don't drink. I know some people think, oh, I'm gonna have a glass of wine or I'm gonna sip on a scotch or some whiskey or something to relax me. Alcohol can make you toss and turn too, right? Or not get you down into your deep state.
Right, 4 hours after your last drink, you wake up in the middle of the night because it's worn off and now you're in a more stimulated state.
Interesting. Wow.
And so people who drink, have a couple of drinks as a nightcap, mm-hmm. often will say, I fall asleep okay, but I keep waking up after 4 hours.
Hmm. All right, so put the bottle down. 888-914-9149. Richard, thank you for joining us. I'm grateful for your call. Ed's in Vallejo, California. Hi, Ed. You're on the air with Dr. Tartaglia.
Yeah, mine's pretty simple. I just let it up to the Lord. I say a rosary before I go to bed. It seems to help me. Hmm. That's all I wanted to say. It just seems to help me.
Ed, you know, I love it. I call the rosary the insomniac's cure. And doctor, if I wake up in the middle of the night for some reason, I'll either try to pray a chaplet of divine mercy or I'll pray a rosary. And the beauty of praying the rosary is that I am going through the decade. All of a sudden, I realize that, you know, I fell asleep, right? You wake up and you start praying it again. You look, you realize, hey, you're out. I don't know what it is about the repetition of the prayer. You know, maybe there's something spiritual to it, but I find myself when I pray the rosary in the middle of the night, it takes me right back into sleep.
Yeah. And it's like holding Mary's hand, you know, and she's your mother. So she's going to allow you to go back to sleep. If the devil woke you up, he's going to want you to go back to sleep rather than pray the rosary. But if God woke you up, then there's somebody you need to be praying for. You'll stay awake and pray.
Is there something about it though? Psychologically, maybe the repetition of the prayer or the focused concentration, is there something that helps get you to dip back down into sleep?
Yeah, I think what happens is most of us, when we say the rosary, we calm down and we feel soothed and we feel more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And that repetition and that familiarity with the prayer really does help.
Yeah. So if you're having trouble sleeping, my guest, Dr. Lou Tartaglia, you can join us 888-914-9149. We move the hands of the clock forward, just giving you some strategies to get a good night's sleep. Tricia is in Cincinnati, Ohio. Tricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes. I had heard or I had seen a video on YouTube about waking up in the middle of the night between like 3 and 5. And it's saying that that's when the devil is trying to get into your psyche. And the suggestion was to pray when you wake up. And once I heard that, I started doing that, and I was falling right back asleep. So I was very happy to hear that.
Well, Doctor, I'll let you respond to what I know. And Tricia, you bring up an interesting point. Sometimes at the actual opposite hour on the clock from the hour in which Christ conquered death on the cross at 3 p.m., the hour we remember his crucifixion and death, a lot of occult activity happens in that dark hour, you know, the 3 a.m. Exactly. hour. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Doctor. Are you familiar? I'll let you respond. I can follow up with you. Go ahead.
I used to work with David Thoma, who was a world-class speaker, and he used to talk to kids all the time. And they would report all this demonic worship that was going on in their families or in their social milieu, and they were really quite messed up. And most of it occurred around 3 a.m. because that's the antithesis of when Christ died for us, and that's when they like to do their ceremonies. So I think there's a lot to that.
Satan's a great ape. He loves to mimic and twist and take things and flip them upside down, right? And that's what he does in that hour. So what I do if I wake up for some reason at the 3 o'clock hour, so I'll pray to my chaplet there, but there's a lot of souls that God may be taking home at that hour. There might be at occult activity or might be other type of sinful behavior. I just pray for it, right? And maybe God is calling you to pray for those souls who are most in need of his mercy at that particular time. So thanks, Tricia, for your call.
This literally happened to me last night. I woke up at 3 a.m. and I started praying the chaplet, and I was like, I don't know why I'm up right now, but I'm going to pray the chaplet.
Really? I woke up too and I started to pray the chaplet.
Did you?
I didn't get through even into the first decade and I was back out again. But it was in the middle of the night. I looked at my clock and I'm like, why? Because I normally sleep through the night. I sleep like a rock. But I prayed last night and that was it. So who knows? Maybe somebody needed a prayer too.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Kelly is in Kissimmee, Florida. Hey, Kelly, thanks for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Hi to your guest.
Hey.
My question is, if I'm getting too much sleep, I'm in my mid-40s, and I feel like I always need 9 hours of sleep, but I'm a busy mother, I'm a teacher, and so I do have a lot of stress, but I fall asleep, and I stay asleep, and I don't want to get up, and I'm just always tired, but if I'm able to, then I'll sleep 9 hours.
That's great, Kelly. Doctor, stay with me, Kelly. I'm going to let him respond. You can ask him a follow-up if you want, but I know the standard is like they say we should have 8 hours. The average American gets
7.5 is after 25. About 7.5 hours is what most people get if they're sleeping well.
So the average American, a stat I saw said we get 6.9 hours of sleep. She says she needs 9. Everybody's different, right? Do certain bodies, to certain physiology, like Kelly, say, no, I really need 8.5, 9, as opposed to 7.5 or 6.
Some people have idiopathic hypersomnia, and they need 12 to 14 hours of sleep. So everybody's a little bit different. But there are different reasons for why you may need more sleep. Some people start to develop apnea, and they're not sleeping well at night, even though they stay asleep the entire night. They need more because it's not really good sleep.
Oh, wow.
And so you have to look at that and see what's going on. If you're snoring, then you definitely want to get a workup to make sure you don't have apnea, and that's why you need the extra sleep.
Kelly, are you? I don't know if you know whether you're snoring or not. That might be. And then, Doctor, what about like low iron or vitamin deficiency or other things that are keeping her fatigued?
Yeah, so low iron is often associated with people who develop restless legs. They get low ferritin levels, which is the iron that goes into the brain. And then they get the urge to move their legs when they're trying to fall asleep. And it takes them longer to actually fall asleep. That runs in families. So you see restless legs in groups of people. Sometimes they get like the whole family wants to come in. The mother, the father, and then you get the children, and you get the siblings, and then even the grandchildren, and they all have restless legs.
Kelly, I hope it works out. You might want to get tested. I mean, I don't think, gosh, I can't imagine 9 hours being a bad thing if you got to sleep through the night, but you know, you may want to get that checked. That's interesting.
All right, thank you.
And
so
you're
much.
A mom, so you're busy.
The issue, Drew, is yeah. if she's still tired after the 9 hours, yeah. then there's something wrong.
Are you still tired, Kelly?
I don't get to get my 9 hours most of the time, so then I'm just really tired, even though it's been 8 hours of
that's
sleep.
That's a bummer. Yeah, you know, I talked to a doctor. I'm not a physician. Dr. Lou Tartaglia is. You know, maybe blood work up. I mean, there's got to be something. If you're feeling fatigued all day long, anemia, I don't know. Maybe she can take a look at seeing why 9 hours is not enough. And Kelly, thanks for being a good mom. We'll say a prayer for you here, too. Let me give the number. We'll take a few more calls. If you're just joining me, we're talking about sleep. If you've got a question regarding it, Dr. Tartaglia is a sleep expert. And because we're moving the hands of the clock forward this Saturday night or this Sunday morning at 2 a.m., thought we'd explore an issue in which 40 million adults suffer from. 40 million adults suffer from chronic sleep disorders. An additional 20 to 30 million have intermittent sleep-related problems. If you're one of them, feel free to join us. 888-914-9149. You can call really for any reason. But Mike's in Mission, Texas. Mike, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Tartaglia. Good afternoon.
Hey, Doc. How are you guys doing today?
All right.
Doing good.
Awesome. I was calling in. I'm a CPAP user, and I used one of those mouthpieces for the first time last night.
Oh yeah.
Didn't wake up feeling so good today.
Oh wow.
Of course, it's my first night with a mouthpiece. But would you think that CPAP or PAP therapy is the gold standard to getting that quality sleep, rejuvenating the blood cells, the brain cells? How do you feel about that? And would you recommend CPAP over mouthpiece?
Yeah, actually, yeah, the CPAP is the gold standard. But I have lots of patients that are referred to dentists for the oral appliance. The issue is if your CPAP pressure is 11 centimeters or lower, the oral appliance almost always works. Yeah. And that's one of the things you have to look at.
So for those who don't know, doctor, let me just interrupt because I don't know. I mean, I know the CPAP actually is the machine that will make sure that you're breathing properly. You put on that mask with the tube. And the mouthpiece, is that simply a mouthpiece or is that a mouthpiece that is also connected to a CPAP machine?
No, it's an oral appliance. What it is it's a double, kind of like a double mouth guard with a hinge on the side. And what happens is it moves your jaw forward when you're sleeping. That advances the tongue and opens up the airway.
Wow.
And it's a good alternative for treating apnea. The problem is you can't on a night-to-night basis look and see how you did with the oral appliance. Yeah. On the CPAP, you can hit a button and look at how many times you stop breathing.
Interesting. Hey, Mike, thank you for the call. I hope you.
No problem.
I hope that device works out for you. I love it. I've got a friend who is on a CPAP machine, and he was saying something about getting a surgery, doctor. Is there a surgery so you don't need a mouthpiece or a CPAP that you can get so you can sleep? There was
right.
something.
There's
they were
the Inspire
do?
Implant that just came out. That's a pacemaker that they put in your chest. They run a wire to your tongue, and when you breathe in, it sends a little electrical impulse, and the tongue moves forward and opens up the airway. And then there's other surgeries that they can do to advance the jaw or to trim the palate, but they don't work as well.
All right. My guest today, Dr. Lou Tartaglia. You can join us here, 888-914-9149. Mel is in Los Angeles, California. Mel, good afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Tartaglia. My name is Mel, and I am a sufferer from sleep disorder. All my life, I sleep no more than 3, 4, 5 hours at the most. And I had problems forever. Sometimes I fall asleep, I tried the CPAP before, and I'm not sure if the technology has advanced. But sometimes I'm so tired, and I'm trying to fall asleep, and I can't because my breathing doesn't allow me. It's like I'm choking or I'm just having lack of oxygen in my brain, and I wake up, and I'm so tired, but I should go to sleep, and I don't. Every night I try, I'm trying something. What prompted me to call you is because I'm trying this technique, going to sleep at the same time, waking up at the same time, get up, take a cold shower, and get my energy going that way.
Wow.
So that's what made me call you. And so, is there anything that you can help me with to regulate my sleep pattern If I had 7 hours, that would be great.
Yeah, great call. Mel, thank you.
But the problem is if you're stopping breathing right at the sleep-wake interface, just as you start to fall asleep, if you start to suffocate, if your breathing slows down, there are little cells in your throat that trigger the suffocation reflex. And then you secrete a little bit of adrenaline. It's like the fight or flight response. And then you lay there with your mind racing and you can't fall asleep. And so the treatment is to treat the apnea or get some way to alleviate the stopping breathing right at the time you're falling asleep.
Yeah.
I see. Well, I have to do this deep breathing, nose, mouth, in and out, and that sort of relaxes me and try to go to sleep again that way. So, but is there anything that you can recommend me to go read or any? I was listening to a couple of callers back talking about some kind of a apparatus that I didn't get what he meant.
Okay, you can go to a dentist that makes oral appliances, and they can see if they can make one for you. If you've already failed on CPAP, then your insurance will allow you to get an oral appliance.
Oh, wow. Oh, interesting. I would think they'd go to the oral appliance before they'd go with the CPAP machine, but that's great. All right, Doctor, I'm going to take a quick break. Mel, thank you for calling. I really hope you get a good night's sleep. It's a torture to be sleep deprived. I know that. If you are just joining us, we have Dr. Lou Tertaglia, one of our nation's sleep experts. It's good to have him here with us today, taking a look as we turn the hands of time forward this coming Sunday morning at 2 a.m., how to get a good night's sleep. A lot of people are going to be tired this weekend. So we'll talk about everything from food to alcohol to things that can affect your sleep and give you strategies to get a good night's sleep. And if you're on hold, I'll get you all on the air. When I come back, I'm going to take a short pause. But you can get in right now at 888-914-9149. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
With flexible premium life insurance by sponsor Catholic Order of Foresters, a 40-year-old can get $1 million coverage for under $19 monthly. Go to relevantradio.com/Forester. That's relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's the wrong rejoin to play at the end of a long day. You're going to put me to sleep, Maggie.
That's the point.
It's good to be with you today. We have a few minutes left. My guest today is Dr. Lou Tertaglia. If you're just joining us, we're just getting up to speed this weekend. Don't forget, okay? Turn the hands of the clock up 1 hour. We spring up, but unfortunately, this is a tough one. You get pretty tired when you lose an hour of sleep, and maybe go to Mass Saturday night, if not Sunday. Some strategies to avoid that abrupt hour of lost sleep. Experts say you should gradually adjust bedtime and your daily activities, like your meals and your exercise routines, to 15 to 20 minutes earlier, starting a few nights beforehand. So it's kind of late now, but it's not. Maybe tonight you could start. Also, set the clock ahead 1 hour on Saturday night, then go to bed your normal time to get ahead of the clock change. And then they say in the morning, get out and get some sunlight. You know, it'll help your internal clock, your circadian clock, adjust. And try to get at least 7 hours of sleep. And they say you need at least that. So if you've got a question regarding sleep or the lack thereof, feel free to give us a call. The number is 888-914-9149. Doctor, can I ask you a question before we jump into the phones again? Can somebody get too much sleep? You know, say you get a good night's sleep 7 hours, 8 hours of sleep, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to turn over and go back for another, right? And you wake up two hours after that, you know? Can you sleep too much?
It's hard to do unless you have a problem. And so there are a lot of problems that where people, they need to keep sleeping. So mostly what happens is when you sleep and you're fully refreshed, you wake up and you don't have any more need for sleep. If you roll back to bed and you're able to go back to sleep for another 3 or 4 hours, you could pretty much assume there's something wrong.
Okay. Martha in Van Nuys, California. Thanks for waiting. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for accepting my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to share, as I heard the young mother sharing how tired she was.
Yeah.
I remember being very tired and sleepy. I couldn't get enough. But once I changed my diet, and including my, just cut out all the junk food and including caffeine, for some reason, it was, even if I would only have it in the morning, it was just not allowing me to sleep. And all that has changed my life. I've never been able to before to get up early, and now I do, and I really enjoy the day. So
Wow. That's
been my experience with eating. Yeah. With better eating habits seems to be that
Wow. I
need less sleep to clean my body during my sleep time, I suppose. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Great advice. And, Doctor, let's pick up on that theme. I mean, she changed her diet, right? She
sleeps
really
better. It's a great topic. I have a lot of patients that when they start to skip breakfast, they have more energy during the day. Other patients, especially my narcolepsy patients, when they reduce the amount of carbohydrates, they're less sleepy.
Wow.
And some people are exquisitely sensitive to carbohydrates when it comes to sleepiness. Wow. Although, in Italy, we eat pasta every day, mm-hmm. and we take a nap after we eat.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So
let's talk naps for a minute too. But I think Martha's got a brilliant idea. Get rid of the caffeine. Don't drink it too late.
Right.
Watch your diet. The junk food. There's certain things that will really mess with you. So maybe our last caller should reevaluate what she is eating. Maybe adjust the diet. Maybe skip breakfast, as you point out. But that's hard as a mother with young kids. But that's
And then mothers should expect to be sleepy because they're going to be awakened in the middle of the night at random. For the first God knows how many years after the baby is born.
What about melatonin? I mean, some of these sleep aids, like the mother who can't sleep. I have a friend that I work with who says, I take Valerian. Okay, so, great. And then a lot of people take melatonin. Melatonin is a hormone. Over in parts of Europe, you actually need a prescription to get it. Here you go into your pharmacy and you buy it right off the counter. Can you speak to melatonin and Valerian, some of the natural sleep aids?
Yeah.
Versus Ambien or Lunesta?
Works best. It works best if you go to bed 7 days a week at the same time and you take it about an hour to an hour and a half before you're going to get into bed. The problem is most Americans go to bed later on the weekends, mm-hmm. and then it's hard to determine when to take it. And so what you have to do is melatonin, salivary melatonin levels. And most people don't do that. They just take the melatonin. But if you hit on when it works, then it'll work. And my patients generally are on higher doses than what they normally sell. So most of them are taking 10 or 15 milligrams. And then melatonin is also useful for patients that have muscle activity or they're moving during REM. It helps settle their sleep down.
Yeah, fascinating. All right, let's go back to the phones. A lot of people waiting to talk with you. Thank you for your patience. I am always grateful for everyone who calls in. 888-914-9149. You can put it in your speed dial and use it anytime to join us. Yolanda's in Rutherford, New Jersey. Hi, Yolanda. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And we appreciate the chaplet.
Thank you.
My daughter and I listened to it on her way to practice, some practice.
Right. That's great.
But thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, my daughter's 15. She's she's a competitive swimmer, but she grinds her teeth, and it almost seems like she never gets enough sleep. Can the grinding of the teeth interfere with her sleeping pattern?
Yes, and it goes both ways. Sometimes there are problems in sleep that the response is that the patient will grind or clench their teeth. I have some patients that whenever they have an apnea, they clench their teeth and it opens their airway.
Oh, wow.
A lot of patients will grind their teeth when they're under more stress. And they generally don't grind when they're dreaming. So getting a bite guard is really helpful. They make sleep a lot better. But you want to find out what's causing the bruxism.
That's good. All right. Yolanda, thank you for your call. I hope that helps. Doctor, I guess you would suggest anyone who has these issues there's sleep studies that can get done, right? Check that out.
They get a sleep study done. They see a sleep specialist. Okay. They talk to their dentist about getting a bite guard to protect their teeth and to see whether or not they sleep better with the bite guard.
All right. Dayton, Ohio is on deck. Linda, good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Linda. Go right ahead.
I don't sleep at night. My mind doesn't shut down. The doctor has put me on different kind of medications, and it doesn't work. I just don't sleep. I might catnap 15 minutes and wake up. I just don't sleep.
I'm sorry to hear that. Do you have a question for the doctor? Do you want to help him?
I mean, what?
Can I make a suggestion?
What's your suggestion? Yeah. What can you suggest?
Take a look at cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. Different universities around the country have online programs where you do the program through your computer, and you practice the cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, and it often improves the situation that you're describing.
All right, Carol.
I'm in the Toledo. Yeah.
No, go ahead, doctor. She's in Ohio. You're in Toledo, right?
So we use. Yeah, right. So we use the CBTI program through the Cleveland Clinic. Yeah. It's called Go! Exclamation point to sleep. And it's really quite helpful in this situation.
That sounds great. Linda, I am really sorry to hear about what you're going through. Hang in there. All right. And hopefully that'll help. The lines are stacked, so I'm going to just try to keep the pace going here, Linda. Carol's in Boston, Mass. Good afternoon.
Hello, Do. Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. This is an experience I had a few years ago, and it was sleep paralysis, and it scared me. Yes. And I always am concerned that it's going to happen again. Do you have anything to say about that, doctor?
Great call. Sleep paralysis.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you a little technique to break it. Everybody, most people, have an episode or two of sleep paralysis sometime during their life. So when you're dreaming, you're paralyzed so you don't act out your dreams. If you wake up and your brain is trying to keep you in REM, keep you dreaming because you need more REM for some reason, REM is where you process stress and you consolidate memory. What will happen is you'll wake up and you won't be able to move. You're paralyzed. And so what does everybody do? They try to move their arms to get out from under the covers. And that doesn't work, and it's scary. Mm. So what you do is it's rapid eye movement sleep. You move your eyes back and forth, or you look around in the dream, right, if you can still see the dream, and look for something that's not there. And what it does is it turns the dream off, and the paralysis goes away.
Fascinating. Well, Carol, thank you for the call. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sure a lot of people have that. It can be terrifying, too, to have sleep paralysis. Yeah. I feel like you're trapped in your body. I've got to take a short pause. This will be the last break of the program, and we'll come back, and we'll talk with Dr. Lou Tertaglia. If you're on hold, I'll go right back to the phones. We're answering your sleep questions. Right? You're struggling to get to sleep, fall asleep, stay asleep. Maybe you're not getting enough sleep. Feel free to give us a call. We move the hands of the clock up this weekend. Our conversation will continue with more right after this. Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you shook me all night long. Good afternoon. Welcome back. It's good to be here with you today. Boy, I hope you are getting good night's sleep. Sleep is so important to your health. If you are not, can I suggest something to you? And of course, get help. Okay, first, we all need good night's sleep for the sake of those that were around, right? And for your own health. There's a lot of physiological and psychological things that can come from it. But, you know, there were some saints that would sacrifice sleep. They would offer up not having sleep, or they would forego it. I could never do that. Maybe that's why I'm not a saint. They say St. Catherine of Siena took a very short sleep only every two nights, and she called it paying the debt of sleep to the body that she owed it. Some of the great saints like John Paul II, he would sleep on the floor. there were other saints like, you know, oh gosh, I think it was Saint, you know, other, I won't go through it all. There's a lot of different saints that have offered a lot of these wonderful mortifications of sleep in order to grow in holiness. You know, I know he's maybe not, maybe it's not something you really want to do, but offer for that wayward child, right? Offer it for the country. Offer it for some intention you're praying for. If for some reason this is a cross in your life, maybe make it meritorious. Let me go to the phones, grab a few quick calls here. Charles is in Putnam, Connecticut. Let me jump to him first. Charles, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon. I have a quick question for the doctor. I do have sleep apnea, and I use a sleep apnea machine. I get about, I want to say about 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night, pretty solid sleep. And then I wake up and I'm not tired anymore. And I go through the day and I'm not tired during the day. Is it something that I should be concerned about that I'm not getting enough sleep, even though I feel fine during the day?
No, not really. It's technically insufficient sleep because it's less than 6 hours. As long as you're not falling asleep before you put the CPAP mask on and sleeping without it in your chair, or you're taking a nap without the CPAP on in the afternoon because you're tired, it's not a problem. There are some people who are actually short sleepers, and they only need 5 to 6 hours a night. It's not as frequent as what I see in my practice. My practice, I have hundreds and hundreds of patients that only sleep 5 to 6 hours, wow. But that's because they're sleep deprived. But there are people who can get by on 5 to 6 hours, no problem.
Who was it? Wasn't there some great inventor that would sleep 4 hours on, 4 hours off, like sleep real short doses?
Actually, it was probably less than that. It was probably 90 minutes. It was Edison.
Thomas Edison. I knew it was somebody who did that. Right, and yeah. I look at the work he was able to get done. Maggie says, no wonder he invented the light bulb. All right. Mary in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'd want to know the use of white noise machines.
Ooh,
is that
question.
A good thing?
So, Doctor, what about those noise machines?
It's not good
machines?
Or bad. If it works, it's okay. If it disrupts your sleep, then it's useless. I have a lot of patients that like it because there are other noises in the house and they want to block it out. And so, in that sense, it's quite good.
Yeah, I would think it would help, right? Can you catch up on sleep? Like, for example, you are sleep deprived. I'm thinking of these saints who have foregone sleep, right? And the paying the debt to the body. Maybe you work a night shift. Maybe, you know, the kids had you all up. You're a new parent, and you're really sleep deprived. Can you catch up on sleep on the weekend and say, oh, I'm staying in. I'm going to get 9-10 hours.
Okay, so when you're sleep deprived, the following night, the amount of slow wave sleep increases. That's in the beginning of the beginning of the night. And on the next night, the REM sleep increases. And now you've caught up for the one night that you had been sleep deprived. So it takes two nights to make up for one night of sleep deprivation.
Wow.
That's not what's going on. Most people are sleep deprived for five nights and try to make it up on the weekend. And it doesn't work.
All right. We'll go back to the phones. Before I do, Maggie wants to jump in with a quick question. She's pregnant. Maggie, how are you sleeping? Are you getting through the night?
Well, I always was a back sleeper, and now they tell you when you're pregnant, you should be sleeping on your sides because it could impact like the blood flow to the baby and your legs. So I don't know. I'm getting used to sleeping on my side. I wake up a couple times a night, but I'm thinking about what you just said about you lose one night of sleep and it takes two nights to catch up. What about for like new parents? We're gearing up for a period of time where we're probably not going to be getting much sleep for a while.
Right. They don't recover until the children have their children and now they have cancer.
I love it.
Oh, my gosh.
Maggie, you're for a ride.
All right, here we go.
For a wild ride.
Yeah, Maggie, your progesterone levels are surging because you're pregnant, and that helps you stay asleep without arousals. So your sleep efficiency is probably better than it was before you were pregnant.
Mm. Wow.
Got it.
She's grumpy here in the afternoons,
Stop
doctor, though. She
it.
Needs a nap, I think. That's like Marvin in Green Bay, thanks for hanging out. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have a major sinus problem, and I'll be sleeping late, and I'll wake up. My body temperature actually feels like it's cold.
Okay.
Now, is a CPAP machine, is that going to help me if I have a sinus condition like that?
The CPAP isn't going to correct the sinus condition. Remember, most likely it's your nasal passages, not your sinuses. The sinuses are off to the side. The nasal passage is in your nose. And what happens is if you lay on one side, the opposite nostril shrinks so that you can breathe better. Most people have a deviated septum, so they sleep preferentially on one side with the bigger nostril away from the pillow. And the CPAP will help because sometimes it causes the nose, the nasal passage to expand a little from the pressure. It makes it easier to breathe.
Marvin, good luck with that. Doctor, I've got a text from one of my colleagues here at the network who gets up at 3:45 a.m. to do a morning show. And John, if you're listening, I'll ask. John Morales, who's the host there, says, what about naps? How important are they? He gets up early. And I'm thinking the people who work, you know, the night shift, too. I know that's not healthy. They live a lot less. Their lifespan is a lot shorter, people who work night shift. What about somebody who's got to get up in the middle of the morning, like that 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, because they've got to go to work? How critical are naps later in the day?
Naps are essential. Most of the world sleeps 6 to 6.5 hours at night and takes a nap in the afternoon. Most of the rest of the world, Europe, Africa, South America, Central America, everybody's napping except for us.
Wow. I used to get so tired.
Naps are important.
When I first started this radio shift, when I started doing afternoon drive, I've done different time slots. Around 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd get so tired, you know? I think maybe it was a lunch I ate or whatever, but you know, after doing it for a while, I feel okay. So can you kind of push through that? Is your body readjust? Because right now, I mean, this is when I got to be sharpest.
Right. So that's a learned behavior. So you've learned how to do that. Yeah. Most of the world, though, eats a bigger lunch and then takes a nap between 2 and 4. Yeah. Most of our accidents occur between 2 and 4 in the afternoon and 2 and 4 at night. 2 and 4 in the afternoon, more than one vehicle is involved. 2 to 4 in the morning, it's usually single motor vehicle accidents where people fell asleep.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Doctor, we have a few minutes. Let me jump back to the phones. Sally is in Edinburgh, Texas. Hey, Sally.
Hi, yes, doctor. What do you recommend when someone has been diagnosed with chronic insomnia and we're on a regimen of a valerian root, melatonin, and a benzodiazepine?
Oh, wow.
We've tried to go off of the medication. I have tried CBTI and other things, but I've been told my problem is neurological due to a previous reaction to an antibiotic medication.
So I don't have any specific recommendation for that because that's awfully complicated and I'd need a little bit more history, but as long as you're stable on the dose of the benzodiazepine for a long period of time and you're not escalating the dose, and as long as it still works, you're okay. The problem is if it suddenly stops working or it's not working and you're still taking it, then you're taking a medication even though it's not effective.
Yeah.
You should practice the CBTI whether you think it works or not because the 5-year outcome using CBTI is better than the 5-year outcome using medications. And having that in your regimen is helpful whether you're on meds or not.
Hey, Doctor, Sally, thank you for your call. I'm out of time, but very quickly, I had a woman who called up, says she either takes CBD or smokes pot, or has an edible, not smokes it. Does CBD or the THC, can that help some people?
It does, and there's different blends. They're now doing a lot of research on the different types of THC and CBD.
I want to look at it.
Which ones help with insomnia?
Doctor, we have to have your back. I know you just came out with your new book. But thanks for being here today. That's Dr. Lou Tartaglia. I'm out of time for the day. I'll be back again soon. Look forward to talking to you then. May God bless you.